Hi, I'm Gene. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gene.
I want to start, of course, by apologizing. I spoke here not too terribly long ago. But it's always a pleasure. I guess I'll start with a little bit of a qualification, because there's some people here that I don't know. I have a fairly typical upbringing, you know, that you hear about in these rooms. My parents were divorced when I was six. My mother is a brilliant but crazy woman, and struggled to raise three kids by herself. Married a man who was not a good person. Divorced him again 4 years later. And through this, I did what I think I needed to do to survive. I got very close to my mother. I made enemies of my sisters. And I developed this enormous superego. I had this incredible sense of right and wrong. And generally, and this persisted long into my adulthood, right meant whatever I felt was true, and wrong meant everything else. And it was very easy for me to determine if you were smart, or you were useful to me, or if you were helpful because you agreed with me. And if you didn't, then you were wrong, and you weren't useful, and you weren't smart, and you weren't. And as a result, I didn't have a lot of friends. And I was a know-it-all, and I can still be a know-it-all. I'm sure I've exhibited that in this room. But drinking wasn't my thing. I'm sure I mentioned last time, you know, I had my first drink when I was five, and I stole a bottle of what I think was creme de menthe and hid it in my bedroom, and I got drunk in church, or I got drunk before church and threw up in church. Luckily, nobody thinks that a five-year-old throwing up is drunk. And then I got drunk again at my mom's second marriage, at her wedding. But then I didn't drink again until college. And I didn't even really drink in college. I started drinking when I was, you know, 21-ish. And then it became a solution for me. I spent a lot of time very, very depressed. And alcohol waylaid my depression. It allowed me to function. It allowed me to converse with women, which was always very, very difficult for me, and remains difficult for me. But fundamentally, it allowed me to not care about all of the things that bothered me. You know, I went to school. I was always good at school. I was not spectacular at school, but I was good at school, and I was good enough at school that I got, you know, brought into a graduate program, and so, you know, graduate school has this way for everyone of prolonging adolescence. And I remained adolescent for a very, very long time. And I stopped being good at school, but I was so invested, and I had this incredibly supportive and incredibly codependent advisor who nursed me through the process. When I think in a functional program, if my graduate program hadn't been so dysfunctional, I'd have been thrown out, and I deserved to be thrown out. But somehow, for some reason, I was walked through that process, despite the fact that it, you know, at that point, after I finished classes and I was you know, doing my research, I was drinking a bottle of bourbon or vodka a day, and I did that for a number of years. And I would work for 2 or 3 hours in the day, and then I would, you know, drink and drink and drink. And I always thought that I was okay because I didn't drink before noon. When you wake up at noon, it doesn't count. You know, when you wake up at noon and you drink at 3, you're drinking in the morning. And I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank. And I met my wife, and her son, and we got married, and I drank. Shortly before we got married, I got my DUI, and she was lovely and brilliant and incredibly codependent, and eventually... So I got my DUI, and I had to go to a driving thing, alcohol counseling in Illinois, where I met somebody that I think a lot of you know, Wes Tobin. And I passed that with flying colors and continued to drink and drink and drink and drink and drink. I didn't fool Wes, but I also didn't do anything that required him to fail me in the program. So I got married, I graduated, which is really a testament to my advisor's determination and not my own. And then I was done. It had never occurred to me to put any thought into what I was going to do after I graduated. I hadn't applied for any jobs. I hadn't, nothing. I started a business because I figured, you know, here I am, I'm this big shot, I have all these talents, and I'll start a business and people will pay me to do something. I didn't know what. And it turns out that nobody was interested in that. That was not a good deal for other people. And so I was not employed, and I was drinking a bottle of whiskey a day, and I was reading a lot of really crappy novels and wasting as much time as I could with no plan. And surprise, surprise, my wife got sick of it. And she told me to go away and to come back sober or not to come back, which I was a bit resentful about considering it was my house. That's how I thought of everything. You know, I had the house before I had her, so it was my house. But I was so sick at this time. She told me later that I looked like someone in the late stage of a terminal illness. And in fact, that's exactly what I was. You know, alcoholism is a terminal, incurable, progressive mental illness. And I have that, and I will always have that. And I was so sick. I was so tired. And so I Googled alcohol rehabilitation, and I called the first number that I found. And this nice guy named Jay answered the phone, and we made arrangements to get me out to California, and this nice guy named Andy picked me up at the airport, and I spent 6 weeks... in California at a really nice, really expensive rehab. And I don't know if I needed that. I know I needed to be sequestered from alcohol. I did not have the ability to not drink. I did not have the ability to not fight for my next drink. I would go to war to get another drink. So I knew that I needed to be apart from society in order to recover, at least in that acute early phase. And society needed me to be apart from society. I loved to drink and drive. And after 6 weeks there, I remember it was on day 12 I had my last craving, and I can still remember it. It was as vivid an image as I've ever seen of just a little rocks glass with, you know, three fingers of brown liquid in it, and it was my entire world. And you know, and it floats there like a halo, and the vegetable peeler is on your bones, and that was the end. That was the last one. And I got out of there, and I felt so good. I felt so free. And I came home, and I started going to meetings. And fortunately, this rehab had been, I started to go to meetings alone. This rehab, God's grace, whatever, was run and owned by a guy who was in this program. And he took us to meetings 6 days a week, and on the seventh day of the week, they had a meeting at the rehab. And so I was introduced. The first thing I did when I checked in, they gave me a big book. And not every rehab is like that. And I am very, very grateful that mine was. And so I came home, and I started going to meetings alone, and I found a sponsor, and he never called me back. So I found another sponsor, Mickey, who I still have today. And he's not here, so I guess I can say this. I picked Mickey because he was the sincerest person I had ever met. Mm-hmm. And since then, I have met a lot of very sincere people in these rooms, and I love that about this place. But at the time, that was just baffling to me. The way he would ask how I was doing, and he wanted me to tell him the answer. That was a really, really foreign concept to me. And Mickey took me through the steps the way they are in the book, which I guess should bring me to step 8. I'm not going to couple it with step 9. I think we do too much of that. I think step 8 is its own thing, and I think it's perfect. You know, we made a list of all of the people that we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I think that and in the book it says we took the list we made in the fourth step. My lists were not entirely the same. They overlapped significantly, of course. I think everyone's do. I guess I shouldn't say that. I can imagine that it wouldn't happen that way, but it did for me, and it has for everyone else that I know. But there were a lot of people on the list that I owed amends to that I did not have resentments against because I had simply used them. And, you know, and Mickey took a lot of that list and said, you don't have to contact those people. They're done with you, and you don't need to try to fix that. Your amends to them can be staying away. That became willing part. I think step 8 and step 6 have a lot in common. I think that it's possible to work step 8 so well that you never get to step 9 by saying, well, I'm not perfectly willing, I'm not entirely willing. Becoming willing is, you know, there were people that I had trouble becoming willing to because I was still angry at them. There were people I had trouble becoming willing to because I owed money. Well, there was a person that I owed money to. And that was very, very difficult to become willing. And there were people that it was difficult to, like I said, because I was angry, but because I felt that they had to go first. you know, that they had wronged me much more severely than I had wronged them. And that if I go and apologize, it's not going to be the same. And it took me a while to understand the difference between amends and apology. But I also had the other problem, and that was that I was very willing with some, and I wanted to do them right away. I wanted to do them from rehab when I hadn't even really done step one. And I think it's important that we don't transgress the order of the steps in that way. I think that, first of all, it doesn't work because we don't really know how to make amends earlier. I know I wouldn't have. And I think it also doesn't work for the other reason, which is, you know, if somebody comes and says, I haven't had a drink in 3 days and I'm really, really sorry, but I'm not, I'm in recovery now and blah, blah, blah. It's like, that is a gigantic sack of bullshit. And people are right for calling it out as such. You know, we spend a lot of time in our drinking lives. I spent a lot of time in my drinking life apologizing for things. And if I try to go and make amends when I'm 4 days sober or 4 months sober, it's A, not going to be real, B, not going to be complete, and C, not going to be accepted. And not that acceptance is necessarily what we go for, you know, but there it minimizes the chances of repairing the relationships. And that's what this is about. That's what this whole program is about for me. It's about being able to live an effective, successful life with good relationships with people. And willingness to make amends is a critical part of that. And before I can be willing, I have to understand what amends mean. I think step eight is really powerful. I think it teaches us a lot about humility to become willing. And humility, you know, like I said, I've been a know-it-all all my life. Humility means being able to say, I may be wrong. It means being able to say, I may not know. And those are the lessons. You know, these steps, I think they teach us lessons in a way that's not necessarily always perfectly straightforward. And as I continue to meditate and understand them, I'm always learning new things, and I like that. My life is changing rather dramatically, and I'll wrap up. I think I may have mentioned that it looks like my job is going to be ending. And I've been looking rather aggressively for new positions, and none of them are in St. Louis. Not none of them. Few of them are in St. Louis. And I've had some very good prospects in, you know, Philadelphia and Providence and places like that. And if I were a gambling person, I would not bet that I'll be living in St. Louis a year from now. And that makes me very sad. I've lived here for all of my adult life. But I used to be so afraid to move on in life. I was so terrified by looking forward and not knowing what was there. And I still am. I'm still terrified. But what I have gotten from this program, in addition to what I came here for, which was to stop pouring alcohol into my head, is that I don't really have to be... Check. No matter that, I remain afraid. I am not subject to the shackles of my fear. Thanks.